That's the Samba Squad out of Toronto with Bateria, the final track of their 14-track 2006 album, Batuque. The Samba Squad started out as a community-based drumming group, but it has become one of the most dynamic and sought-after acts on the Canadian world music and Latin music scenes. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, of course, we can begin the program today looking at what happened yesterday. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, the duopoly's erstwhile frontrunners in yesterday's Wisconsin primaries, both got trounced. Trump by Ted Cruz with 48.2% to 35.1% of the Republican vote, and Clinton by Bernie Sanders, 56.6% of the Democratic vote to her 43.1% of the vote. Experts in the media today are busily dissecting the political upsets, attributing them to a wide range of factors from personal appeal to campaign strategy to issues they championed. But there's little, if any, discussion about what the Wisconsin primaries really proved, that once again, the system, in fact, is rigged. And that's where we're going today. Well, oddly enough, I think Donald Trump has a point. As odious as he is, I mean, we have to discuss this in a kind of clinical sense, but there is the commonality here that both the Republicans and the Democrats are playing by different sets of rules and attempting, with the help of a compliant media, to make it appear as if these are the rules. The rule, as they say in Brooklyn, them's the rules. And the rules are about these apportioning of delegates and super delegates. And I think we have some questions here about the essential nature of voting and this whole process, that the parties themselves, in effect, have decided that all this being party business, okay, and that's what it is, the party is conducting its business affairs, and part of the business affairs is to find a standard bearer for the general election when the vote is for the general public. But in the primary system, the primary systems are just ways in which the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, this is their system for selecting a candidate, a nominee. And so they make the rules. And the rules are very complicated, it would seem, because even political experts are hard-pressed to describe the process as being straightforward. If you win a state, you win the so-called delegates. And why do you need delegates and whatnot? But anyway, the way it is constructed has become an interesting way to frustrate the process of so-called democracy, it would seem to me. And nobody makes a better case about this than Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And this is how politics can be, very strange. Now, Donald Trump, who has been winning and winning and winning, he says, and it's true, he's been winning all over the place. He's getting the popular vote. His opponents, first of all, the field of 17, just like his reality show, he has survived several rounds, and he has been staying ahead of everybody, and they're falling by the wayside, quickly falling by the wayside. And he has emerged as the so-called front runner. He's the guy to beat. But Trump is not doing so well with the delegate count. although the Republicans apportion delegates very differently from the way the Democrats do. In some cases, they have a winner-take-all system, but it's still a matter of these delegates. It's the party's delegates that at their convention, and the Republicans are having theirs in Cleveland this summer. At the convention, these delegates are the people who will vote for their standard bearer, the party's standard bearer, to go up against the Democratic candidate and other candidates in the field. But I'm asking a question about the integrity of this whole delegate process and how the parties, under the aegis of doing party business, essentially are engaging, in my view, and I'm not a legal expert, but I think the case could be made here that the voting public is not sufficiently educated to understand this process and probably would make different choices if they were to understand that their vote does not necessarily mean that the candidate yields the benefit of the vote, that their vote could possibly and very possibly be diluted or completely thrown out by the arbitrary rules allotted to the delegate system. I think there's a case there to be made. Now, Trump is saying, look, how is it possible that I'm winning and I've racked up all these wins? Millions of people are voting for me, but I'm not yet in the lead with the delegates. The quick response is, well, these are the rules. This is how it works in the Republican Party. And now he's saying, well, the rules ought to be changed. But of course, the retort to that is you should have known the rules from the beginning. But we have an interesting flip side of that discussion as advanced, or more correctly, not advanced by Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is running. He is racking up impressive wins. In fact, the victory in Wisconsin is his seventh out of the last eight. That's impressive, all the more so because he is a kind of underdog candidate here. As against Hillary Clinton, high profile, been in the public eye all this time, big, big money behind her. She has, the benefit of having a husband who was president. She was Secretary of State. She has all this stuff going for her. But she is entirely beatable. And Bernie Sanders has proven that. However, it's already won. Barring something monumentally miraculous, Hillary Clinton will be the nominee for the Democratic Party by virtue of the manipulation of this delegate system. So the same thing is applying on that side of the aisle. People say, well, wait a minute. These are the rules. Whether you like them or not, this is how we do our thing as a party. And we set the rules. As we have been discussing here, we're not hearing from Bernie Sanders the same kind of outrage that we're hearing from Donald Trump about how this delegate system works and how it is quite possible that popular victory doesn't necessarily mean that you will clinch the nomination of the party, because you have, and here's the kicker, the Democrats go one better than the Republicans in terms of another layer of impediments that they can legally put in place to frustrate and to completely nullify the popular vote. They have okay, the tech gods have decided to interfere with me today, but we're back. I'm sorry, I was just told that I was lost there for a minute. Well, I'm talking about this idea of the vote. The impression that people have, the general public, I think, is under the impression that when they vote in these primaries, a vote is a vote, and they're participating in a process, a democratic process, not party business, but a democratic process in which their votes will count and in which there is an expectation that their vote will not be tampered with and not be manipulated and will not be set aside. That is a direct reference to the delegate system. Right? I think when people are voting, whether Democrats or Republicans or any other party person, voting in these primaries, the notion that they have when they cast their vote is that they are doing so in the grand tradition, as it were, of democracy. And the parties, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and perhaps other parties, are very careful not to educate the voting public that this is not so. They do not explain to the prospective voter that they have a different process at play, in play, that there are mechanisms that could, in fact, contradict and contravene their votes and set their votes aside, nullify their votes. They are very careful, these parties, the duopoly, not to explain to the public how their system works. So I make the case in this regard that the voting public participating in the primaries largely is being hoodwinked. They believe these are elections, and these elections are important and are part of the broadly held view of elections. Now, you're participating in the presidential election, but the education isn't there and purposely is not there. The education is not there because it's important to the parties to keep the voting public as ignorant of the process as possible. Because chances are, if the voting public were to know that these primaries essentially are about party business, this is how the party is doing its business. It makes up its arbitrary rules, which may or may not have any resemblance at all to the popularly held view about the integrity of votes and about the democratic process. Democratic with a small d. And that if the public were to know these things, they would probably have different attitudes about voting in primaries and possibly make entirely different choices. So the premise here of my argument in this regard is that the primary process as is and has been, it has been going on for a long time, is in fact a rigged process that encourages and reinforces in the voting public a deliberate and intentional ignorance about the process. It is in the interest of the party's elite, the interest of the people who control the outcome of things, that this be so. I think this ought to be challenged. I think the parties should not, under the idea that they are just conducting party business, can suspend the popular notion about how voting should matter and what their responsibilities and legal responsibilities attached to voting and protecting the integrity of the vote. Simply because you're conducting party business doesn't mean you can make up the rules all any way you want. And if you are, like anything else, I think the parties ought to be required to conduct, prior to primaries, a significant period of public education about what exactly is going to happen and could happen in a primary, especially as it relates to these delegate and superdelegate issues. So I'm calling here for some kind of a massive lawsuit, massive assault on this process, which essentially is legal permission to rig an election. Why? The argument falling out of the first premise is that if the party can manipulate its process at will, then it also manipulates the choices that the people have. Hillary Clinton is winning, for example, on the Democratic side. Donald Trump is winning on the Republican side. Quite possibly, that was not going to be so unless the process was rigged. And how are we to know whether these so-called front runners are legitimate? How are we to know that they are legitimate if the process is not legitimate? And yet, if from this group emerges the eventual president of the United States, the argument further goes that the parties aided and abetted in massive voter fraud and produced a candidate whose ascendancy was rigged. And that's as basic as you can get about making an argument that this is a totally undemocratic process and it ought to be questioned and it ought to be destroyed. It ought to cease. Now, I'm sure there's a counter argument to everything I said. Somebody's going to tell me, well, look, it's party business. I'm saying, okay, if it's party business, it's party business, if you want to do it that way. But what is the problem about educating the public about party business? The Democrats who are voting in the Democratic primaries and the Republicans who are voting in the Republican primaries and people of all persuasions who are voting in open primaries all ought to know how their votes are going to be treated and whether their votes and their choices are going to be sacrosanct. That they will, the process will honor the integrity of their vote. Do you know, in talking about this election the way we have here on this program, I have been very surprised, I must tell you. I have gotten so many messages from listeners who said they had no idea this is how it works. And they're very intelligent people, very smart people, very competent people. They had no idea that this is how it works, which means that this is a deliberate effort to keep the public in the dark. This is part and parcel of the hoodwinking of America when it comes to elections. So in this regard, we have a bunch of crooks that we ought to identify, and the duopoly is riddled with them, which is why neither the Republicans nor the Democrats, to my mind, deserve any credibility because they both are fostering and promoting a rigged system, plain and simple. And it filters down from there, and downward and outward. The media become part of this process. We see how the parties chose their front runners. Hillary Clinton, even before she was, quote, elected senator from New York, that path was cleared for her to do that. And one would argue there might have been far better candidates for the job, or at least there should have been other people who should have competed fairly for the job. But it's not a fair process. This has nothing to do with what's fair. Right now, the day after Bernie Sanders trounced Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin, he still is not winning. Now, whether you're a Bernie Sanders fan or you're not, I'm questioning the process. The same with Donald Trump. And I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, but it's a process he's questioning. And that has legitimacy. It's a very fair question. The parties are not engaging in this process, and the media have gone through great pains to make it look normal. Nobody in the media that I have been looking at and, you know, combing through, I'm not seeing an abundance of reports and articles or seeing, you know, stories on television criticizing this thing. I am not seeing legal analysts questioning this as a constitutional issue. I'm not seeing anybody raising even the minutest specter that there may be a need to look at this process because it contravenes the widely held view that the vote is sacrosanct. And it clearly impugns both the Democratic and Republican parties for deliberately not educating the public, the voting public, as to what is possible, what could happen despite their vote. So I say, where are we? And this brings me back to Mr. Sanders. You know, he has a burden to bear here. He's being awfully compliant and complacent on the matter of the delegates and superdelegates issue, it seems to me. And time is ticking by, and we're not seeing from him what we would expect a revolutionary to do, a political revolution that he talks about, has nothing to do, no applicability from his point of view, to this very elemental and crucial question, even though it so adversely affects him as a candidate, but more importantly, it affects the integrity of the millions of voters voting for him. And therefore, he has a major obligation to get this thing out, to be critical of the party, and to stand up for the integrity of the votes that he's getting. So I've been asking the question, what is he doing and what will he be doing with the millions of votes he's getting? And in what way are we seeing right now a capitulation, despite all the fact that, you know, he's an uphill climber, he's doing well, he's doing extremely well as a person starting a campaign the way he started? It's Jesse Jackson part two. This is an uphill climb, and he is doing very, very well. However, he is not switching lanes. He's still in the Democratic lane, and he should have switched by now. He should have indicated a parting, some kind of an ideological parting of ways, but he's not. He should be standing up, never mind all the other things he says that he differs with Hillary Clinton on. He apparently agrees with the Democratic Party's undemocratic process, because we're not hearing any noises from him about it. So from him, too, we're getting really, really disturbing and troubling signals with regard to the integrity of the votes that he's getting, guarding and safeguarding the integrity of the votes. And that has to do with how they are being used. To what purpose are these votes being put? If it is okay with Sanders that the delegate and superdelegate system could cost him the nomination, and it looks very likely that it will, because the losing Clinton is way ahead by virtue of this rigged system in the Democratic Party that she has no problems with, and that he should have problems with. This should be a fundamental difference with them, and it should be out there. It should be out loud and clear. He doesn't stand for this, but he's not being loud, nor is he being clear about it, which tells me that we have to look to Bernie Sanders to do the predictable. After all of this, the millions of votes that he's getting, essentially as a protest vote, will be brought and offered up on the altar of complacency and sellout to the Democrats. Or maybe he has other plans, except those plans should have been known by now. And those plans should include a third-party run. Those plans should include parting ways dramatically with the Democratic Party. Those plans should include attacking the Democratic Party's undemocratic process. Those plans should include consistent signals to his base, his constituent base, that he, having garnered their support and their confidence, is returning the favor by safeguarding the integrity of their votes. But he's not doing that. We'll take this break and come back to some of your thoughts at 888-874-4888. To PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about this undemocratic process that, in fact, is the big lesson of the Wisconsin primary. The fact that it has produced these, people are calling them monumental results, but I'm saying that it proves only that the system has perfected the art of contravening the integrity of the people's votes. And that does not seem to be part of the business of the media to report this and to talk about it and to insist that there is some reason here to believe that both parties are engaging in rigging this election through this ridiculous delegate and superdelegate system that they have with respect to the Democrats, and that under the guise of party business that they're somehow they are immune to constitutional protections of the vote, which is why they make it very, very much a part of their silence on this thing to not educate the voters as to how the system actually works. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Beatrice?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, we every 4 years we get involved in this extravaganza of a dog and pony show. You have to educate yourself because they're not going to tell you about the system, the Electoral College, the fact that even though you can win a state here and a state there, mathematically you can't win. The superdelegates, it seems like they change the rules to suit the game or to suit the candidate when they want. And that's why people have to wake up and educate themselves and personally buck this system. Bernie Sanders is never going to ask for a third-party run. And the force and power that the movement that he or the movement behind him that he started, I'm afraid is going to wind up all for naught unless the people within the movement continue it. Because the only thing you can do, I've said it once, I'll say it 100 times, you have to continue a viable movement past this four-year circus. And you have to use the momentum that you have to influence people, to educate people, and to take over the local government. Because through taking over the local government, you can influence the national government. But that's the only way you're going to win in this game. It's too much. There's too much money. There's too much corruption. There's too much lying. There's too much strange bedfellows to even think you're going to get a fair shake every 4 years. And the limited choices that you have, the lesser of the two evils or the evil of the two lessers, is a common thing. So, I understand what you're saying, but Bernie Sanders is never going to make a move like that because he's part of the system. No matter how much liberal talking he does, he's part of the system.
Well, I agree with you. However, the question on the table to you is, do you think there's room here to mount a legal challenge outside of this election or so forth, but actually using the lessons we are learning about the way the system works as this election is being conducted? Do you think there is room here to challenge the legality of the actions of the Democrat and Republican parties?
There is room, technically speaking, from the limited amount I know about law as far as fraud and deception and the way I understand how that law works in New York State. But you got to remember, you're using a system that benefits from the system that you're trying to indict. It's like an analogy is the DA convicting a cop. You understand what I'm saying? You see what just happened in New York City with Liang and the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office. I mean, you get a conviction, but the system is not going to allow any real justice to happen because one part of the system protects the other part of the system. You understand what I'm saying? The two hands wash each other, both hands wash the face.
All right. Well, you have a handle on it, and I thank you for sharing your ideas today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Hotep to the PRN family, Beatrice. We love you dearly. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you.
I want to first comment that this started with the Democratic process, Democratic Party, in 1972. So it goes back a long time. As to whether it's viable to take a class action, perhaps, suit, I think that in many ways that is a good idea. However, you have to keep in mind that the judiciary who gave us Citizens United, they're a big part of the problem and the process. But in terms of theory and just a way to confront it, I think since it's such a long-standing problem, and by the way, the Republicans don't duplicate that, and it's just so interesting that the Democrats, since 72, created the superdelegates. As to Bernie's position, I think that he's probably torn between trying to confront that in the midst of trying to really get the nomination, but they do seem to have some strategy because they have convinced certain superdelegates who can who's basically pledged to Hillary but can vote either way. So I think they're probably torn between confronting it in the midst of moving forward with the nomination and at the same time a strategy where they're looking to convert the superdelegates. But, yes, it needs to be confronted, and we need to figure out who, there are specialized election attorneys, and it definitely needs to be taken on as a point of debate and to get it out there because the mainstream media is not even taking it on. And I heard, what's that lady that's on the NewsHour? I think she's with Politico, Amy somebody. She actually suggested that the superdelegates puts the underdog, the challenger, in a better position, which is ridiculous, of course. So that's my comment.
Let me ask you, if you were aware of how this process worked, would you participate in the primaries?
Well, I am aware, and I actually do plan. I'm not usually a participant in the process, but, you know, I'm somewhat inspired by Bernie and some of the things he's talking about. And by the way, there's a red alert to everyone because there's some flim-flamming going on with the Board of Elections in Brooklyn and in the city. So people who registered, say, a couple months ago got back cards, and I saw some of the documentation saying that they're eligible to vote November 16th. Make sure that if that's your situation, you call that number in Brooklyn. They'll tell you, oh, that's an error, that's a keystroke that was put in by mistake. They check the record and say, oh, yes, you can vote on April 19th. You call the Manhattan, the main office, they'll tell you the same thing. And then be a citizen journalist. Speak to the media liaison, I believe her name is Vasquez, and she'll reassure you. So some people will have the two and a half weeks to get back the corrected card. But if not, and you want to participate, go to your polling place and tell them the story in terms of the wrong keystroke and that you were told you could vote in the April 19th primary.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your participation today.
Thank you.
This is a basic question having to do with, I think, having to do with what is perceived as our rights as citizens, people who are voting. When a party, any party, can organize a process that, at least on its face, it looks like it just contravenes what we broadly accept as our constitutionally protected rights. And they get away with doing this thing by putting the system together so as to be able to manipulate the outcome. They are directly affecting the outcome. And they have, in the end, the arbitrary and sole discretion in the form of a conspiracy, depending on, you know, how people feel this process ought to go, they can actually engineer it to go that way. And again, with respect to Hillary Clinton, this has happened. This is what happened to result in her senatorial so-called victory. The path was cleared. And she all but was given it as a kind of consolation prize for basically not making great rifts when Bill Clinton had his little problem there. But this is a basic question, and this is not a bad time to raise it constitutionally. Are the parties engaging in what is essentially unconstitutional conduct when they conduct these primaries and people are believing that their votes absolutely are sacrosanct, and we are seeing that a whole other process is at play and producing entirely different outcomes. And the parties apparently are immune from any prosecution or any kind of regulation in this regard. I find it very, very amazing and troubling, because if this were to happen in any other country, you would hear no end of criticism, no end of calls for, you know, democracy and all this other kind of stuff. You would hear about corruption, and you would hear about the votes are being, the voting power of the citizen is being abused and so forth. But it's happening here in front of our faces, and everybody's acting like they don't see it, that this is no big deal. It is a big deal. It is a big deal. It is a big deal that, A, people don't know what it is, this process. The civic part, the education, has not been done, and it won't be done, because it is in the interests of the parties not to engage its membership in a full understanding of how these things work. Because, as I said before, an educated person may make other choices than to participate. And it seems to me that the parties have an obligation to do that, to explain to its membership how the primary system works. In the same way that I think the nation as a whole, in the general election, ought to be told how that system works. That, yes, they will be voting, but their votes may not necessarily be the ones that would determine who the president and vice president are. A whole other entity does that. And it may do so under constitutional protection in a manner that has nothing to do with the integrity of your vote. Your vote could be set aside. Is that right? Is that constitutional? Is that democratic with a small d? I don't think so. And I think we need to start asking these questions, because in the end, this is supposed to be the hallmark of citizen action, that you vote. This is participatory democracy. You vote, therefore you are expressing a desire, and you are expressing also your level of participation in a process. And the process has to do with the relationship between those who govern and those who are governed. It's a very serious business. When you take it upon yourself to concoct this convoluted way of essentially rigging elections, and it is regarded as totally legal, nothing wrong, there's no reason to be upset about it, and Dems the rules, well, I think we ought to say, well, wait a minute. Why are the media not doing their job? Why is Congress not doing its job? Why is the U.S. Supreme Court not doing its job? Why are all these constitutional lawyers not doing their job and protecting what is supposed to be the hallmark of our society? That you have the right to vote. People died for the right to vote in this land. The vote is supposed to be sacrosanct. And we have a flagrant record here in this current election, in the 2016 election cycle. We have a series of repeat offenses of the manipulation of the outcome of these primaries that are being held all over the country. And these results will now determine who the standard bearers are going to be come November, and ultimately who the president of the United States will be. But the system is rigged. There's no other word for it. This should not be allowed. And we need to start asking these questions. But more importantly, we need to start asking the candidates, why aren't they all asking these questions? And particularly of Mr. Sanders, the avowed socialist, democratic socialist, who of late is being attacked by his opponent, Clinton, as he's not a real Democrat, she says. So now she's getting nasty. They're going the way the Republicans have gone. But even he is not making this an issue, and it seems to me that he ought to. And he still has these questions to answer about what he intends to do with these millions of votes that he's getting under the guise, with the understanding, I should say, that he is going to do something entirely different. And we're not seeing that yet. And it seems to me that the window is closing. The window of opportunity to make that known is fast closing. So he better do something fast, or the people should do something fast. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure to be with you. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. And you can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID Stories, plural, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.